Welcome to Viewpoint, Chaplain Malcolm Boyd. Someone has said that young people have even ceased to look to adults for aid in deciding their problems in life. Do you find any of this true?
There's always been a rebellion, I suppose, Father Kennedy, on the part of youth. I think it's accentuated today. We are living in the world of mass communication, a world of technology, a world that we're lost in, a world that we don't know what to do with. And this is true of all of us. We are groping to make sense out of it and to use it rightly rather than wrongly. In the middle of this, in the shambles of this, in the confusion after two world wars, the rebellion is accentuated because what other rebellion would be so obvious? And there has to be a protest. Youth is protesting because what it's really saying is, maybe we didn't ask to be born into this particular world. We're here. If you're going to college, you have to start making good grades in junior high school because you have to have a B-plus average to get into college you want to get into. If you're going to be a successful person in a certain profession, you can't have fun, but by the time you're a sophomore in high school, you should already be fairly good at it because the competition is so great with the population explosion. A bachelor degree means nothing. Everybody knows that. A master's degree means very little. PhD even doesn't mean much, so I suppose they'll invent a new degree. This is the kind of world. And so in this, the protest begins in relationship to one's father and mother. And then very quickly it extends to the church because this is a close emotional association identified with the family.
Do young people look to the adult world for answers, for help in deciding, or do they try to settle it all by themselves?
They looked to the adult world and they saw such confusion, and they saw that the adults couldn't give them answers, and they saw the father figure collapse and the mother figure collapse, at least as they looked at them and in terms of what they wanted. And I don't think they look any more to the adult world for answers. And this has driven them in upon themselves in the peculiar, restless way in which they live, which underneath the facade of cynicism is marked by a kind of desperate searching.
What are some of the marks of this facade?
Well, the facade, I think, has to do with maybe a kind of nonchalance, that sort of maddening passivity sometimes in the face of adult compulsion, the seeming not to care, the preoccupation with the things which the adult world cannot readily understand, which might range from folk song festivals to a particular kind of car, a particular rejection of religion, a particular preoccupation with a certain summer activity or maybe a social kind of self-giving. And an awful lot of students now aren't taking the summer vacation for themselves, but they want to tutor underprivileged children or they want to get involved in a work camp. This is very interesting. At one university that I know of, not my own because I don't have any statistics on my own on this, but at one university, I think 65% of the undergraduates were involved not in playing in the summer, but or in studying or working on their degrees, but in kind of social work.
Trying to help somebody else.
Trying to help somebody else.
Do they connect religion with the pat answer, which no longer gives them an answer?
I think very much. And I think there are two particular aspects of this. One, the Sunday school or the church school has not frequently enough, perhaps, been able to adapt itself to young people. I do think we need new forms, even more than we have them. Frankly, we probably ought not to meet in church buildings. Now, this is a radical suggestion, but I found in college work that we cannot meet any longer in a church structure. I meet the students in the student union, or I meet with them in my apartment. And many atheistic and agnostic and other students who don't have to be labeled but who have rejected religion will come to the apartment, sit on the floor, and in groups speak about what they want to speak about in a permissive environment.
You've mentioned some magazines, and I know that you've been greatly interested in mass media. Do you think that men are using mass media for their best benefit?
Tragically, not at all. I don't want to say not at all, because the news is awfully important, and we do receive the news through the mass media, except so darn many newspapers and magazines are involved in oversimplification and sugarcoating and stressing entertainment rather than objective, impartial presentation of the news we so desperately need to understand in order to survive as a culture. But I think the mass media in general, naturally, they're neutral. It's men who are good and bad. We are combinations of goodness and badness, and we misuse so many things. We're misusing nuclear energy, and man often misuses sexuality. Man misuses a lot of things, and I think we more readily misuse the mass media than we use them correctly. You see, there's this part of our brain, we're told, isn't there, that we don't even begin to make use of? And instead of this endless deluge of, it's not even entertainment, it's a narcotic. It's a suicide. I want to die to the next 5 hours. I don't want to have to ask myself a serious question or be confronted by anything. Therefore, this is a narcotic. And obviously, this is a misuse.
Do you find that the mass media, which includes all forms of communication, of course, is interested in the welfare of the person to whom they direct themselves?
No, because I do think, again, we come back to human nature, and we are all basically selfish and egotistical, and as we grapple with the meaning of the Christian life, we try to offer this to God and to be transformed. But the mass media, in the hands of many, many persons, perhaps, who aren't struggling in this particular way, use the media as a means of aggrandizement, the accumulation of power, and certainly the accumulation of revenue.
Do they use it to manipulate people?
I'm afraid very much. In so many ways, too. There's so much manipulation, and the difficult thing about it is, I think, in many ways, naturally, we don't know when we're being manipulated. The best manipulation is when we're unaware, I guess, of the manipulation. And some people have this down to a fine art. I will use these terms and try very briefly to explain them. One is news and non-news, and another is art and non-art. In other words, news is objective. It is a reporting of events. Non-news is fabricated news. It is propaganda. It is the report of something which either didn't happen or else didn't happen in this way or else isn't nearly so important as it is made to appear to be. So consequently, a certain silly story about somebody's difficulty trying to find love, maybe, and this person might be a minor celebrity. When this knocks a crisis in world politics off the front page, there's simply been a distortion, an emphasis, and one is dealing with non-news. So I think it helps very much if one can identify what is news and what is non-news. And then naturally, Father Kennedy, I would say then the person, if he's Christian, has a responsibility to seek out the news and to label the non-news. And the same thing with art and non-art. Non-art, kish, bad art, a perversion of the meaning of art. Then here is art, on the other hand.